Right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Phil Radford, Executive Director of Greenpeace. And Phil's here to talk about a very unhappy situation where the Russians have detained 30 crew members of the Greenpeace ship Arctic Sunrise. And we are very happy you could join us, Phil, to update us on the situation with your 30-member crew, the activists with Greenpeace that are now in a Russian prison.
Thank you for having me.
So maybe first of all, you can review for our listeners. I'm sure most everybody listening does, have some information about the Greenpeace ship, but maybe not. And you can maybe just summarize what took place there in the Arctic Ocean.
Well, folks know that Greenpeace is the world's largest global advocacy group working to protect our environment. And one of the biggest issues facing the environment right now is climate change. And it's caused by burning oil, burning coal, and other fossil fuels, which is heating up the atmosphere. And where we're seeing the biggest impacts, even though we're seeing the seasons change throughout the U.S. and stronger wildfires, stronger hurricanes and storms, one of the places where the impacts are the strongest is the Arctic, both the North Pole and the South Pole in Antarctica. Now what's happening is that the sea ice is melting so quickly. In fact, this year was the sixth least sea ice ever in history recorded by people, and also all the history we can tell from ice samples and all the data from thousands of years ago. And that's because of global warming. And the problem is the response of the Russian government and the U.S. government and others is not, oh my gosh, we need to shift to clean energy and stop global warming. The response has been, this is great. We can now drill for more oil in the Arctic. So Greenpeace sent a ship up there, the Arctic Sunrise, and protested Arctic drilling. And a few people were arrested during that. And the next day, the Russian government sent the Coast Guard. And in the dark of night, they brought a helicopter over the ship. Military forces descended from a rope, held people at gunpoint, pulled knives on people, arrested people illegally in international waters, and have sentenced people to 2 months in jail with no charges.
Now, from what I understand, one of the charges that the Russian court is investigating and may prosecute the 30 members of the crew for is piracy, which doesn't sound like it syncs up with what these activists were engaged in there in the Arctic Ocean.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the only thing that it shows is that the Russian government is guilty of lunacy. You know, piracy is, it's an age-old pattern of breaking laws so that individuals can steal from others for private gain. That was not what was happening here. There was a small group of activists who thought, you know, the Arctic is proof that climate change is changing our world, changing our seasons, and could have really bad effects for all of us. And drilling more oil is just an insane response to that. And so they went up there to bear witness to that in the Quaker tradition of Greenpeace and to show the world that this is happening and this is nuts. And the response by the Russian government was really an overreaction, when really what they should be doing is reacting to the problems of global warming.
Phil Radford is our guest executive director of Greenpeace, and we're talking about the detainment of 30 members of his Greenpeace ship Arctic Sunrise. And Phil, what kind of assistance are you able to provide members of your group that are being held by the Russians at this point? What kind of attorneys or assistance in defending their case, which I guess will be heard over the next couple of months?
Well, each government, there are people from all over the world on this crew, and there are two people with U.S. citizenship. One's Peter Wilcox, who's the captain. And each government is intervening to make sure that they have representation, legal representation, that they're being treated well. The biggest challenge is that legal representation in many of the Russian courts is not very reassuring. And so Peter and others knew that they were taking a personal risk going into Russian waters originally to put the spotlight on what Russia was doing in terms of oil drilling and causing more global warming. But the Russian government's reaction has been really severe, and really over the top. And so we've been able to get good legal counsel. Governments are weighing in, but now it's really time for Secretary Kerry and the White House to weigh in and say, it's insane to hold a U.S. citizen or two for 2 months without any charges.
Well, that's an important issue to bring up. What has been the reaction of the home governments of the various members of Greenpeace, the Greenpeace crew that's being held, including, as you just mentioned, the United States?
Well, I think the U.S. has been working diligently through back channels and through the embassy to ensure people's safety and work to get people released. The Dutch government has accused the Russian government of violating international law, which they did. You're not allowed to raid a ship in international waters and arrest people outside of your jurisdiction. And they did that. And so the Dutch government has demanded the release of all the prisoners and the ship. And the ship is flagged in Holland. The government of Finland has said similar things, saying that this is illegal and the prisoners should be released. So different governors have taken different governments have taken different public stances. You know, it's the U.S. government, it's really every government's role, but also the U.S. government's role to make sure that no American citizen is subject to being held in prison for 2 months before ever being charged with anything.
Phil Radford, I wanted to talk a bit more about the reason for the protest when the Greenpeace activists boarded the oil rig there, the Russian oil rig in the Arctic Ocean. Maybe you can speak to which strikes me, and I'm sure many, as a perverse irony, that because of global warming, the Arctic ice has melted, providing opportunities and access for drilling for fossil fuels in this place that once was inaccessible. So now we have governments like Russia, and I'm sure others will follow here, that will be drilling for fossil fuels in that very environmentally sensitive part of the Earth.
Yeah, it's both ironic and really it's almost a death wish, in that there are certain stores of fossil fuels, like certain stores of oil in the Arctic, certain deposits of oil in the tar sands in Canada, certain deposits of coal in the West in the Powder River Basin, where scientists basically say if we dig that up or drill that and if we burn it, then we will have such runaway global warming that the Earth may not be able to sustain the sheer number of people that we have today. So it's not only ironic that these oil companies and governments who've been complicit with them have been causing global warming and caused the ice to melt, but it's really scary, the kind of insanity of the profit motive of these few oil companies, where they are working so hard to squeeze out the last drops of oil, regardless of what it could do to the human race and all the diversity of life on our planet.
Along those same lines, I know your group and many climate activists around the world paid close attention to the release of a recent report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which seems to, with ever more certainty, talk about the link between U.S. production of carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases and the rise in temperature across the globe. Maybe you could speak to what is important for people to know about this recent report.
So the first thing you should know about this group of scientists, it's 3,000 to 5,000 scientists that the UN pulls together every year, is that every 5 years they come together and they look at all the best peer-reviewed science that appears in scientific journals, and they summarize it. And countries from Saudi Arabia that has oil interests to the United States, when George Bush ran the United States, you know, every country sends scientists and the governments agree on which scientists can go, and the governments sign off on the content of the scientific report. And so it's very watered down. It's more conservative than it needs to be. And it still says humans, they are 95% certain that humans are causing global warming, that by 2050 and 2020 even, we need to start dramatically reducing our reliance on coal and natural gas and oil and shifting to clean energy. That we need to change our economy quickly, and, you know, there will be benefits like cleaner air, cleaner jobs. There will be a whole bunch of benefits for doing that. And that the consequences are getting worse and worse. We used to think that we would have maybe a foot or so of sea level rise this century or by 2050 because of what we're doing. But now people are thinking that in New York we could have 3 feet, which means New York is underwater, the subways are inundated. And so basically we know humans are doing it now. There's very little doubt. The consequences scientists are predicting are conservative in this report, and the impacts are really dramatic and could affect how much life there can be on Earth.
We're speaking with Phil Radford, Executive Director of Greenpeace, and we're talking about the direct action protest that members of Greenpeace undertook in the Arctic Ocean, boarding a Russian oil rig, protesting the exploitation of fossil fuels in that very sensitive part of the world, and the dangers of global warming. And Phil, it seems that no matter how many years have gone by in terms of raising the alarm bells about the threat of global warming to the planet and its people and all species, that governments have been extremely slow in taking any action here. And, you know, I guess the more cynical among us will say, hey, it's going to have to, you know, the fire has to reach our government leaders' door in order for them to take notice and take action, which is quite dangerous because reversing global warming can take decades, if not a lot more than that. So immediate action has long been called for that very reason. What can you tell us about, you know, the role of your group, Greenpeace, in trying to raise the alarm bells and make this issue more urgent than it obviously is to many governments around the world?
Well, there are two things that give me hope. So one is that clean energy is winning. So, you know, the fossil fuel industry, it kills people. So, for example, 13,000 people died last year in the United States from air pollution from coal. So it's killing people, but clean energy is winning. So here's what I mean. Xcel Energy a few days ago, a big power producing company that uses coal and natural gas and nuclear, said that they're investing now in solar and wind for their new energy because it's the most cost-effective and reliable source of energy in the United States. The clean energy industry is asking no longer to have subsidies after 2016. Even though coal and oil and gas are subsidized, they think they can still win without subsidies. And last year, 49% of all new energy in the United States was clean. It was solar, it was wind, it was energy efficiency. And in January, 100%. Of all new clean energy was clean in the United States. So what is exciting to me and what gives me hope is that clean energy and plug-in electric cars and electric vehicles are on the rise and they're winning. The second thing that gives me hope is that people are on the rise. And when you say the fire needs to come to politicians' doors, what I hope it is not is literal forest fires like we're seeing across the West right now. And what I hope it is how fired up people are to fight for their future and to fight for the future their kids deserve and to fight for the world we want to see and to fight for clean air and clean energy and fundamentally for these oily companies and these coal companies to no longer run our politics.
A lot of people are concerned that whatever happens in the next few years could be too little too late. I mean, I don't want to I'm not that kind of pessimist, but I don't know the science, and I know you're a lot more acquainted with it than most people. Would it be too late to really take concerted action in the next few years to turn things around?
You know, you never know. You never know. I mean, we do know that some global warming is here. You know, we know that the Arctic sea ice is the sixth lowest it's ever been, that last year was the lowest it's ever been. We know that Sandy was stronger because of global warming in some ways. So we know that some global warming is here. You know, this is nothing compared to what we could have and what will come if we don't change. And I think to sit back and say, oh, we might not be able to fix the problem and to be able to look our kids in the eyes or our grandkids in the eyes is just something I can't live with and is something that I think very few Americans would choose to do. So what we do at Greenpeace every day is we get up in the morning and we say we can stop the worst of this and we can make a better society in the process and we can bring people together and we can fight for clean air, we can fight for clean energy, we can fight for healthy communities. And in that process of coming together, we can also create a better society.
We're speaking with Phil Radford, Executive Director of Greenpeace. We're talking about the 30 Greenpeace activists being held by Russia after their direct action targeting a Russian oil rig in the Arctic Ocean and the impoundment of their ship, the Arctic Sunrise. And this isn't the first time Greenpeace has had conflicts with nations around the world. It was in 1985 that the Greenpeace ship Rainbow Warrior was bombed in Auckland, New Zealand harbor by French intelligence for Greenpeace's interference in nuclear tests in the Pacific Ocean, I believe, as I remember. Phil, maybe you could talk to us about the kind of history of you know, sort of standing up to governments that your group has engaged in for quite some time. I'll just mention parenthetically here that the captain of the Arctic Sunrise, now being held in Russia, is Peter Wilcox, as you mentioned earlier, who is a native of Norwalk, Connecticut. And I went to high school with him, and I remember he was always involved in seafaring types of things on Long Island Sound, where I grew up. But he was captain of the Rainbow Warrior back in 1985, if I'm correct, when the bombing of the Rainbow Warrior took place, right?
That's right. Yeah, you know, Greenpeace started out in 1971, and it was a small group of people. Some were Quakers who believed in peaceful protest, which is still a core part of our values. Some were journalists, some were against the Vietnam War, and some were conservationists. And they had all been working against the Vietnam War, and the government, obviously, of the U.S. was hell-bent on continuing that war. So they had very little reason for hope. And they heard that the U.S. government was planning to test nuclear weapons on a small island off of Alaska called Inchitka. And there were a couple problems. One was that there was a bird sanctuary. One was that it was on a fault line. And, you know, we've seen the problems with Fukushima with nuclear and fault lines combined. And they thought testing a nuclear bomb on the fault line could set off a tsunami. And they were opposed to developing nuclear weapons because of its sheer destruction. So they'd been losing their fight. They'd been losing and losing. They had been fighting against the Vietnam War. They hadn't gotten anywhere. But they still felt an obligation to stand up. And so they borrowed a ship, a little rickety ship, and they would just sail out into the blast zone to physically get in the way and bear witness. They had no idea if they'd live or die. But they just thought that they had to stand up and share with the world what was going on. And they didn't stop that test, but when they came back, so many people said, I support that and I want to be a part of that, that people came together all around the world and passed bans on nuclear testing both below ground and above ground. You know, we did the same types of protests in that campaign against the French government's testing. And that's when Mitterrand, who was running France at the time, personally approved their special forces bombing one of our ships, which killed a freelance photographer, Fernando Pereira, who was on the ship. And it was one of our staff members' birthdays that night, so most of the crew was in town, or else we would have lost Peter and everybody else. And today, Peter, you know, we see pictures of him standing in a cage in court in Russia, where he's being told that he'll be detained for 2 months without charges while they decide whether or not they should charge him as a pirate. And, you know, Peter made a choice a long time ago to kind of quietly, humbly go through the waters of the world to expose environmental problems, the countries or companies that are causing the problems, to bring light to them and to do something to stand up like those original folks in Inchitka. Just to say, here's the problem. And the pictures of him, we haven't been able to talk to him, but the pictures of him, he's incredibly serene. He's a very peaceful person. And I can't imagine how difficult this is in the conditions of Russian prisons. But he is willing to take these risks and stand up because he, like everybody at Greenpeace, all 4,000 people and all 2 million volunteers we have, we just firmly believe that it's worth some level of risk and it's worth standing up and doing something so that we can stop the oil companies or the coal companies or the complicit politicians from driving us over an edge.
I would imagine Peter, yourself, and most of the activists at Greenpeace believe in the credo that citizen activism is necessary when governments fail to act. And what does that mean going forward with things like the Keystone XL pipeline, the expansion of hydraulic fracturing to get more natural gas in the shale formations under the earth around the world, and regulating the expansion of the use of coal and coal energy plants? What does that mean to you in terms of the coming challenges?
Well, I think, these companies, the coal industries, the oil and gas industries, they are desperate. And they're desperate for a reason. They're desperate. You know, the coal and natural gas companies are desperate because clean energy is winning. And so they're doing everything they can to pass any cost they can onto us. You know, they're so happy that you and I pay for the emergency room. They don't have to when their pollution triggers asthma attacks. They're doing everything they can to make society bear the brunt of their bad business model and bear the cost so that they can try to stay alive and compete with clean energy, but they'll lose. And the oil industry is desperate because we're running out of cheap oil in the world. It's so expensive to drill for oil in the Arctic. You know, it's so expensive to go to the tar sands and fracture it. It's fracking. They frack the ground. They get this tar, literally tar. They have to build nuclear and coal and natural gas plants to boil it so that they can get oil out of it. And then they have to ship it. And you can't do that for what gas prices used to be. You have to be at like $75 or more dollars a barrel to do that. And so because they're running out of cheap oil, they're running out of cheap coal, and we have electric cars and with clean electricity coming, they are desperate. So they're desperately trying to stay in business while our prices go up. And then at the same time, you have more and more people waking up to the fact that we have very little time to work to pass on a world worth living in for our children. And that's not desperation like the coal and oil and natural gas people have. That's more of a calling to leave something better for your children. And I think more people will say when government fails to act on the biggest issues of our time, and when corporations fail to listen and adapt and shift to ways that they can make money that are good for our future, more and more people will peacefully sit down in the way. More and more people will get on that original Greenpeace boat and sail out to tell the world what's happening. And we'll have more and more Peters, but more and more Peters who are willing to spend 2 months in a Russian jail to tell the world that we have got to stop this insanity.
Well said, Phil Radford, Executive Director of Greenpeace. Thank you so much for your time. Before you go, though, do tell our listeners how they can lend their voice calling for the Russian government's release of the 30 Greenpeace activists and more generally to take a more responsible course in terms of their energy policies. And that could be said of most governments around the world. But, yes, tell us how they can get involved.
There are many ways to get involved, but if you go to greenpeace.org, green the color, peace like world peace.org, there's a button there for volunteering, there's a button there for donating, and there's a button there for more information. If you'd like to volunteer, we'd love it. If you'd invest in our work, we'd love it. Greenpeace only exists because 4 million people around the world say, we want to be a part of this, and so we need you to be a part of that.
Well, thank you so much for spending time with us. Thanks for all your important work out there in the world, Phil Radford. And, I'm sure I expressed the wishes for many of our listeners tonight for a quick release of the 30 Greenpeace activists being held in Russia. And Godspeed to you and to Peter Wilcox and everybody else in that crew. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Good night. That's Phil Radford, Executive Director of Greenpeace. And